Thanks for choosing to listen to this edition of Chris Fabry Live. As we have said on the program many times, you are always an insider with us. We don't charge for this service. But if you'd like to contribute to help out, go to chrisfabrylive.org and click on the support button. Now, enjoy the program. You are a difference maker. Your heart, your soul, your life. You are making a difference to those around you, even if you don't sense it or understand it. This is Chris Fabry Live, coming to you from the Cactus Compound and Detox Center near Tucson, Arizona. And this program is going to make a difference in somebody's life here as we start out the new year. Today's broadcast is a best-of program from back in October of 2010, October 19, to be exact. It deals with the life of a woman who loved something, who had that thing she loved taken away from her. And then, instead of giving up, she allowed God to give her a new vision of that thing. So don't call us today. We are pre-recorded, but please sit back, relax, do whatever you have to do to continue listening. You might want to go to our website, which is chrisfabrylive.org. Last name is five letters, F-A-B as in Fab, F-A-B-R-Y, chrisfabrylive.org. And one of the reasons we wanted to air this today here in our first day of the new year, at least first broadcast day, is that in the coming days and weeks, I want to look at people's lives who've been given a dream and who have allowed God to mold that dream into something that He wants to do in and through them. Because I am convinced that we can either hold on to the vision we have, you know, the dream that we have generated inside of us, what we think that ought to be, what we think life ought to be, or we can allow God to shape that in us to do what He wants. That's what the story of Alice Tyson is going to teach today. That's what I hope you hear coming through loud and clear. And let's hit the rewind button, Eric, to go back to October of 2010. Today's program is going to be close to a lot of people's hearts because it's going to be right where you are living. I don't want to tell you too much about it until we get into it, but if you feel like everything has kind of fallen apart in your world, and you're not sure that God is in the stuff that you look around and see, stay with us. I think it's going to be an encouragement. Here's an email that we got after yesterday's program, and we talked about with Tracy Grote, who wrote the book Madman. And I just want to read you this email. If you didn't hear the program yesterday, you can go online at chrisfabrylive.org and hear it again. But the book is about the Gadarene demoniac. It's about the guy who they tried to chain. And I read the two of the Mark and Luke versions of this. You know, they had the chains on him, and he kept breaking the chains. He kept cutting himself. It was just this imprisoning existence. You know, he had all of these demons in him. So here's the email that came after the program yesterday. Today's program is too close to my heart. Unfortunately, a few years ago, I lost a job that triggered an amazingly dark episode in my life. Unexpectedly, I woke up one evening to find myself feeling such a darkness around me. I had never experienced anything like this before. It was the most horrible feeling imaginable. The fear was enormous. When I described the situation to a select few later, I could only say that I felt that something was trying to get at me, and it was very dark. Some of you know exactly what this person was talking about. You've been through those situations, and I think it's really interesting that this emailer writes that it was sometime later that the words came out that this happened. We've talked about this with sexual abuse. We've talked about it with any kind of abuse or things that are going on in relationships. We keep it hidden. We don't talk about it. And just the exercise of speaking the truth with our lips and saying, this is what happened to me, sometimes is the catalyst that gets things moving in our life. And I wanted to say that here at the beginning. This person says, I was a faithful Christian woman. I knew the love of Jesus. I knew to involve God somehow. I was desperate. I grabbed Luther's catechism from my confirmation days, sat on the floor in my bathroom at about 2 a.m., and just read out loud anything I could find that confirmed what I believed in. I thought I was crazy, and that was one of the worst parts. I didn't feel there was anyone I could share my situation with who wouldn't think I was nuts. This situation happened to me 3 nights in a row. 3 nights in a row, she felt like she was, you know, going over the deep end. She had this oppression. It was just so dark. Somebody, something is trying to get at her. She writes, I knew I had talked to somebody. Thankfully, I have a compassionate and educated pastor who helped me immediately and got me in touch with others who could help me. Today is a much better time in my life. I've not had a similar episode since that very lonely time a few years back. With the crisis period over, I still feel hesitant to share my story with quote-unquote normal people, feeling that they will think I live in la-la land. I know that I don't, well, at least not most of the time, but I wonder if others have walked this road and not shared for fear of any retribution. I'm going to remain anonymous, but I appreciate your program and particularly this subject. I do not think you're alone. I think there are others who have gone through the same thing or the same type of thing. And I go back to different conversations that we've had, some recently, that have said, you know, if you don't have any kind of opposition about what you're doing, then maybe there's something wrong. And when you do come up against that opposition, don't lose heart. Your life, there is life in the struggle. There is proof that there's something going on by the very fact that you're struggling with it. And I go back to one of friends of mine just said recently, he was just so frustrated. You know, he yelled at his kids and he wasn't kind to his son about this or that. He was just beating himself up. And all of us in the group said, man, you know, good for you. This is a sign that there's life there and that the, you know, that you're feeling bad about this is proof that God's working in you. So if there's something that has you down, that's not the point to push you down. God wants to raise you up and bring you out of that thing and to work on your heart and to, so that you can, as we said at the beginning, love well, live fully, and follow him. I don't know where that came from, but that's pretty good. Here's something else I believe. I believe that God is there when things do fall apart. I think he's there before they fall apart, as they're falling apart, and after they've fallen apart. And as a matter of fact, after the things have gone awry is sometimes the best place to be. He can still work through you when things don't go the way that you have planned. I'm working on this story now, and I usually don't talk a whole lot about the things that I'm working on because I find that if you talk about it, you don't write it. You know, if I talk about what I'm going to get my wife for her birthday, I'll talk about it, but I won't go out and do whatever it is that I think would be good. But this story is about a guy who's just made a mess of his life, and he's not a Christian, but there are significant people in his life who are, and everything has fallen apart, and everything has come to this microcosm of you know, he's at the end of his days. He's at the end of his, what he knows how to do, and he can't do it anymore. And he needs help from outside. Our guest was in that situation. And if you look at your life as a story that is being written, as something that God is working out, rather than you going and writing that story, I think it can make the chapters a lot easier to take that you're living through. And if you're living through some really difficult stuff these days, I want you to stay with us because Alice Tyson has a story about what God has done in her life. We'll be right back. You're listening to Chris Fabry Live, direct from Moody Radio. It's great to have you here listening or re-listening. Tell a friend about the program and how they can hear us online right here. You are our best means of advertisement, really, and our best ministry resource because you help us spread the word about quality broadcasts. Now let's get back to the program. I'm really glad you joined us today for Chris Fabry Live. And if you'd like to find out more about the program, more about our guest and links, that kind of thing, you can go to chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org. If you don't know how to spell my name, well, get in line. Its last name is F-A-B as in Fab, F-A-B-R-Y. I want to introduce you to Alice Tyson. Her last name is not spelled like the chicken manufacturer. It's the T-E-I-S-A-N variety. But we are glad that she is here. And I have actually emailed with Alice for a number of months. Yay, it might have been last year that she first got in touch with me. And I found out a little bit about what she does and what she's been through in her life. She is founder and executive director of His Wheels International, which is a bicycle service organization providing Christian missions with bicycles and bicycle expertise. She lives in Wheaton, Illinois. Alice, thanks a lot for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thank you for having me.
It's good to finally hear your voice after all these emails we've traded.
Yes, I've appreciated following your story over the years. So,
well, let's deal with yours, because I'm fascinated with how God does this kind of thing. With at the very point when we think, you know, God, I can't do anything, He seems to want to do it, and wheels or bicycles have kind of been your life, haven't they?
Yes, they have. By the age of 30, I'd biked 10,000 miles on four continents, and my goal was to bike on all seven continents and through all 50 states. And I'd crossed the United States twice, from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon, and San Diego, Virginia, to Virginia, or from San Diego to Virginia Beach in high school. So.
No, wait a minute. I got to go back further then. When did you get your first bike? Did you get one for Christmas?
Well, my first bike came out of the trash. It's pretty symbolic, Chris, to this story, because as the story will unfold, you'll see that I'm still getting bikes out of the trash. But the first bike came out of the trash. I learned how to ride, and the first devastating experience on a bike was after I'd learned the day after it broke in half as I was riding, and I cried all the way home.
It broke in half?
It broke. There was a reason it was in the trash. Sometimes it's good to leave trash in the trash.
I know all about that. Okay, so and did your parents encourage this, or is this something that you had to just simply do on your own?
No, they're the ones that got it, and they taught me how to bike, and my dad has a disability, but he ran alongside of me as best he could, and within a day, as a five-year-old, I learned how to bike, and then cycling has, as my father said just a couple weeks ago, his daughter has a bicycle-shaped heart. And so then at 15, I have a twin brother who is going to bike cross-country, and he decided not to. So my parents had already paid the down payment and said, you know, Alice, why don't you go on this trip? You love athletics. You love cycling. You like adventure. And they told me to go on vacation, but one of the things, they told me I could spend the rest of my life working, but one of the things that they failed to tell me was when to begin working. So I cycled up until the age of 30, and then in 1992, I was 4 days from going on a 1,000-mile, 10-day bicycle trip when I woke up to go to work, and the life I knew it had ceased to exist.
So you were going to a thousand. See, most people listening right now would say, you're going to ride a bike 1,000 miles. And you're doing that on your off time, you know, as a vacation. You've got to be crazy. But that just showed how much you loved cycling.
Right. Actually, I was going to go and look at it as possibly leaving my position as a nurse and going to lead cross-country bicycle trips. So it was basically going to be a 2-week interview to see if I wanted to go and work with this company or not. And but 4 days prior, I fell, I came down with what seemed like the flu, and I slithered to the phone to call my boss and tell her I wouldn't be in for work. And what I didn't know then was that was the last day I would ever return to full-time work.
What happened?
Well, I was struck with, took 10 months to diagnose it, but I was struck with chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome. And I'd gotten up to use the bathroom, get ready for work, and I had a bout of diarrhea that left me unable to walk to the phone. The room spun, and each day I thought, well, tomorrow I'll feel better. You know, we kind of put a time frame on the flu, 24 hours. And my flu has gone on now for 18 years, and I each day it got worse. It got so bad that I couldn't get out of bed for be out of bed for more than a couple hours at a time without feeling so bad I had to go back to bed. And 10 months later, I was diagnosed with chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome. At the time, in 1992, it was known as yuppie flu. And I had heard that diagnosis on the radio, and I thought, oh, wow, this is terrible. You know, now they have their own flu. The yuppies have their own flu. It's called yuppie flu.
But when and you would say, you probably would say, you know, people need to get over this. You just get over it, get back to work, just, you know, return, do your own job. And here it was happening to you.
Yeah, I mean, it has never been presented in a very positive light. You know, the word yuppie flu doesn't say anything but that it's just this kind of wimpy situation. But chronic fatigue syndrome affects every body system. And in 1995, a doctor said that every day a CFIDS patient, chronic fatigue patient, feels significantly the same as an AIDS patient feels 2 months before death. And one of the leading people, Dr. Nancy Klimas, who treats both AIDS and CFIDS patients, said, if someone made me choose between having AIDS or CFIDS, I'd choose AIDS. My AIDS patients are living a much more normal life than any CFIDS patients are able to live.
Isn't that something? You know, when we did Dr. Norm Wright on that subject, and we just re-aired that conversation with him not long ago.
Right, a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I get email, you know, response from so many people who say, you know, thank you for talking about this. This is my condition. And then I'll get a requisite amount, a percentage of email from people, many medical professionals who will say, this is a bogus diagnosis. This doesn't really exist. There's no scientific proof for this. And, you know, you're continuing to tell people about this and acting as if it's true. And that's where they're coming from. That's what they were taught in medical school, or, you know, that's what they believe. And you went to nursing school. You didn't hear anything about that, right?
No. Matter of fact, you know, I am not a statistic in that area. I was seeing one of my physician at the time, is still my physician now, 19 years later, which is a statistic all of its own for someone with chronic fatigue syndrome. And, you know, I was a colleague of hers, worked at Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's in the city of Chicago. And, you know, one day we were colleagues and the next day I was a patient. And but she never doubted my situation. And, you know, I think it's in my favor that I was getting ready to go on a 1,000-mile bicycle trip, because when I hung up my bike, people knew things were serious.
Yes, exactly. And it wasn't like you progressively went downhill and just decided you didn't want to work anymore. You know, this happened. For most people who have CFIDS, is this something that happens like that it's immediately, or is it more of a progression for them?
Well, that's the problem with CFIDS. There aren't really any cookie-cutter cases. They say that it often comes on with a virulent type flu, or, you know, just the quick flu. You wake up and you think, well, I'm going to work, and you look in the mirror or whatever, and you realize I'm not going anywhere but back to bed because, you know, I feel too sick. Yeah. And my symptoms have included severe aches and pain throughout my body. I would call it a central pain. You know, people want to say when I'm sick, well, what hurts?
Yes.
No, it's a bone pain. My whole body hurts. I have a persistent low-grade fever, and I can run it for a year at a time. And actually, that's why we're doing this. Our listeners don't know, but we're doing it by telephone because I didn't have the strength to be able to go in to Chicago today, even though I would have liked to have been in the studio. So I can have a low-grade fever, you know, the kind that just says, oh, no, I'm too sick to get out of bed. When standing still, my heart rate would rapidly rise from 80 beats to 160 beats per minute in 30 seconds. I was only able to exercise at about a quarter of what I used to, and then it would take 24 hours to 72 hours to recover. Buildings over 68 degrees create a cardiac and nervous system response that creates a problem that can last for days. And it took me 10 years to figure out this. I would go to a Bible study in an elderly family's home, and after we'd finished the treats, which were the first thing, they'd start in, and all of a sudden I'd start feeling sick, and I'd think, you know, you are a wimp, Alice. You can't even sit through a Bible study. And then I realized I can't be in a home or a building above 68 degrees. It really cuts down on, you know, it's huge social isolation. My house is at 60 degrees right now, and I don't think too many people want to come and, you know.
They'd be cold, a little chilly.
Right. Yeah. Inability to get restful sleep, even though, you know, there's a bone tiredness. A disruptive brain fog, making it hard to find the right words or to remain focused. At one point, it was even hard to play solitaire on the computer because of this fog. And for me, I have a four-year-old car, and it has 20,000 miles on it. And the reason is because when I get in the car, I'm not able to concentrate. And so when I was first sick and I thought, well, this is all in my head. After all, that's what the media tells you, right? And, you know, you just said it on the radio that you've heard people come back to you with that. But when I knew I'd needed to go home and I wasn't doing well, when someone would, another driver would say some explicit things, and I knew it was related to my driving and I wasn't safe to be on the road.
You know, the question then that I have for you with your cycling, were you ever able to get back on the bike again in these last 18 years?
Well, I have, but, you know, there had been days that I've gotten on the bike and I've biked a mile, and my heart has screamed to bike 40 or 60. In 2000, I had always told my physician I would never even consider returning to full-time work until I was able to go on a bicycle trip. And in 2006, the organization I had done all my cycling with called and said, hey, why don't you join us for the trip? We know you're sick. We'll pay for the trip. I said, you know, I don't know if I can bike a mile or if I can bike, you know, 10 miles or nothing. They said, that doesn't matter. I said, but, you know, I have to bring my bike. It's a bicycle trip. And it was a week-long trip. And in the week, I was able to ride a total of 100 miles, and it was just a miracle for me. And it waxes and wanes. I haven't done a whole lot of riding because I have this sensory overload, and moving creates a problem, which is part of the chronic fatigue syndrome. And so I've set my bike up inside, and I've just really enjoyed, you know, spinning my wheels indoors. And so I have kept the bike near and dear to me. At one point in 2000, I wanted to sell my bicycle, and my best friend said, you know, Alice, you can't sell your bicycle, because if you sell your bicycle, you're giving up hope.
Yes. Yeah. My guess is that your bicycle is not like, you know, I go down to the big box store and buy. It's probably a road bike or something that's a little more expensive, right?
Yes. Yes, it was it's a road bike, and I bought it used, but it was a custom-built bike by a guy who was a mechanic on one of the trips that I had ridden through Israel in my 20s. And just to upgrade the parts this year would have cost me about $1,500. They were given to me, so
wow.
I was able to upgrade my bike. But, you know, the interesting thing is my bike... God had a reason that I wasn't to sell my bicycle. And the reason was in 2003, my life went a little awry in 2003. I've continued to have this condition, and I've been able to work part-time a few times throughout those years, but only minimal hours, and I've had 3 serious relapses, so I can no longer practice nursing. But in 2003, I received a letter that said my benefits had been terminated, my long-term disability benefits, and I was devastated. I didn't know how I would live. I'm single. I own my own home, and I was only able to make $450 a month due to my health, and I now wasn't going to have an income. And I was depressed. I wondered if God had forgotten me. Why me? What had I done wrong? And it was
okay. Let me stop you right there, Alice, because I want to leave you right there, and then we'll take a break, because that's where a lot of people are today. God, I'm begging you, help me. I'm right here. I've had this dream and desire, and it's been taken away from me. I don't know what you're doing. As I'm calling out to you, I don't even know if you're there anymore. Are you listening? Can you hear me? Did somebody cut the line? I don't know. Some of you are right there. And I want you to stay with us and find out then, after all that Alice had been through, how did God show up? How did he show himself faithful to her in this situation that she finds herself in? If you want to find out more about our guest, you can go to our website, chrisfabrylive.org. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Chris Fabry Live. Remember, you can link with us online at facebook.com. Just type in Chris Fabry Live. Also, the website has many more past programs you might be interested in, and you can support us there as well. We don't charge anything for this service, and you can help us in that way. All at chrisfabrylive.org. Our guest today on Chris Fabry Live is Alice Tyson. She is founder and executive director of His Wheels International, which is a bicycle service organization providing Christian missions with bicycles and bicycle expertise. She is joining us by phone. You've heard a little bit of her story if you're just joining us. She just loved riding a bike. And, you know, we talked with Chip Ingram about this holy ambition, something that God can give you that you use in your life. And it just feels like, you know, all along the road there, Alice, God was preparing you that, you know, just love the bicycle and you love those wheels spinning and putting a lot of ground underneath you. It just was part of who you were. And then all of a sudden he takes it away, and you've had this condition for 18 years now. And we got to the point where you were in 2003, you were given this news that your disability was being taken away. You were depressed, partly because of the circumstances and through all the losses that you had, not necessarily a clinical depression. It was just, you know, I've lost a lot. That ambition that God had given me, that desire that he'd given me, I can't use it anymore. And you were telling me in the break you went to the medical people, and they said, well, you know, you need to keep doing this and go to somebody. You went to the lawyers. They said, go to lawyers. And they said, no, you need to go to psychologist. And psychologist sent you to the pastor. You know, it was just like you were a pinball bouncing around looking for somebody to give you answers, right?
Right. And you know what I found out were that the professionals don't have answers. I longed for a human to speak to the depth and core of my soul, past my despair and fear, and tell me I was okay and would be okay in the future. And what I realized was I'd mistaken professionals for a provident God. For God says, you know, he will never leave us and he will never forsake us. And in the midst of this, you know, suffering can cause the foundation of our faith to crumble or soar. And on my way to church on Sunday, I saw a marquee that says, suffering is an option. Hmm. And as I was sitting in church, I thought, that person is really confused, because in my life, I would say, suffering is the leg on my journey that has led to the hidden beauties in God's garden.
Oh, wait a minute. You got to read that for me again. Suffering is the what?
Leg on my journey.
Leg on your journey.
That has led to the hidden beauties in God's garden.
Mm.
And, you know, Philippians 3:10 says, don't be confused. You're going to face suffering. It says, I know that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. Now, we know that part. That's a very common part in the church. But then it says, and may share his sufferings, becoming like him in his death. And, you know, it's what we do in the hidden years, the years we live in hidden obedience, when life seems to be going nowhere, or maybe even worse, falling apart, as mine was, that is preparation for the time God has for us in his spotlight.
Yeah, absolutely. But you don't have a problem then with saying, at least if he didn't cause this, that in his providence, God allowed this to happen to you so that he could do something in and through you that you wouldn't have been able to do had you been able to keep writing.
Yes, you know, I wouldn't wish CFIDS on anybody, but I would not exchange it for the lessons that I have learned and the person I have become. It's been in the depth of the suffering and depth of the pain that I have found peace and contentment in the Lord. And I wouldn't trade it for what he's given me.
You know, that's what Walt Wongren said, and his is his cancer, that,
right.
You know, I'm not fighting, and you're not fighting CFIDS every day when you wake up. He said that he has embraced this and that there is life in the embracing of whatever the condition is that he is in, and the continual working out of that, you know, the salvation that he's given us and the struggle where the life is. Okay, so let's go on a little bit further then. You had all of this happen to you. You've been down and out, and they've counted to 10 almost on you. How did God show up in that?
Well, it was interesting because this went on for 6 months, a very deep depression, you know, circumstantial, but yet there were no answers. And in the fall of 2003, a couple from my church, Walt and Ellen, invited me to join them for dinner with a Billy Graham scholar from Tanzania. And we just had a great time talking, and I love the internationals. Matter of fact, God really gave me my original goal back in when I did a short-term mission trip in Zimbabwe. I left, and I realized my goal in 1983 was to somehow provide tools for nationals so they could serve their own people. Well, that went dormant for many years, and I didn't have any idea how that would be fulfilled, but that remained a very strong core thread in my life. And after I left the Lutenbecca, or after I left with Walt and Ellen and this couple, it was September of 2003, and for the next 3 months, God challenged me in a soft whisper that gradually got a little louder each day, have them over for dinner. Have them over. And I kept saying, God, you don't get it. You have taken everything from me. I have nothing to offer this couple. I kept hearing, have them over. You know, every Sunday I'd see them, have them over. It was a week before they were leaving, or maybe even 2 days. And it was a Sunday in December of 2003. And I said, you know, do you have dinner plans? No. Well, would you join me for dinner? Well, I wasn't able to stay for the service because I was too sick. So I had to go home. And it's not the way a woman likes to prepare for dinner guests, to have to go home to bed. We like to go home, clean our house, you know, have everything prepped properly. But I had a choice, either bed and obedience, or you know, making a nice meal and not being able to entertain. So the Lutenbeckas, John and Carolyn, a couple from Tanzania, came over, and I asked them in a conversation, how could our church help your ministry in Tanzania? And without hesitation, John said, if every family in the church gave a $100 gift, each gift would buy a bicycle, allowing a pastor or evangelist to reach five villages, and a village can be 5 to 6 hours walk from another village, and help them to reach many for Christ. And as John shared this vision, my bicycling passions, buried since the onset of CFIDS, rushed to my mind. And God was reminding me, he had given me these passions, that since I was five, a favorite pastime of mine was, bicycling. At the age of 15, I rode from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon. At 16, I rode from San Diego to Virginia. At 17, I rode through England and Scotland. In 1983, I served in Zimbabwe, Africa, and rode a broken-down bike and thought, if I just had a cable and a tool, I could fix this bike. In 1988, I biked through Israel. In 1989, I biked through the Canadian Rockies. And by the age of 30, I'd biked 10,000 miles on four continents. You know, I couldn't get cycling out of my mind, my dream, or my conversations, even though I had tried because, you know, my bike was hung up. It had been hung up for a long time. But, you know, I learned that cycling was woven into the matrix of my life. And so I don't know what else they said that evening because I was just stunned that God had, you know, was unraveling a plan that my disobedience almost caused me to miss hearing the
vision. If you hadn't had them over for dinner, you wouldn't have gotten in that conversation.
Yeah, and I'm aware. I'm aware that the sin of omission is one that catches many of us Americans, and I almost found myself guilty. I'm glad we serve a patient God who pursues us, not just once, but continually.
So His Wheels International, now I'm on your website, which is hiswheels.org. You provide bicycles to individuals on six continents. You design and build hand-pedaled three-wheelers, which you call trikes. You collect, refurbish, and distribute and resell used bicycles. Assist nationals to build trikes locally to provide employment. So this is it's almost like a small business thing for those in the third world in a lot of ways. And then you explore trike opportunities or these, when I think of a trike, I think of a kid's. That's not what this is. This is not for little children, right?
No. So let me just finish what happened, though. God challenged me to give $1,200. The pipe cost of my road bike, the one we were talking about earlier that you guessed I didn't get at the local big box store.
Yes.
But I was only making $450 a month. So God and I grappled. He won and I did too. I gave the $1,200 and in 1 week, I didn't, you know, what sounds like faith today would have sounded like foolishness then. So I didn't tell anybody how much money I'd given. But in 1 week's time, the whole amount returned and my next 6 month car insurance bill that was coming due. And so that was the first time. The next year, I was challenged to give $1,200 again, and that bike bought five hand-pedaled trikes in Nigeria and five bikes for seminary students. And in 2005, I was challenged to begin His Wheels. And so we began small. And as you said, we're a not-for-profit bicycle and hand-pedaled tricycle organization. And our mission is to provide pedal-powered transportation with dignity through global partnerships as a tool for expanding Christ's kingdom.
Well, you've told us then how God showed up and what the vision was. When we come back, I want to find out what has happened since then. What has God been doing for this person who is not really able to ride that much anymore, but that matrix of her life, you know, the wheels of her heart that were wheels. What's God going to do with that? Stay with us. We'll continue and conclude after these messages. This is Chris Fabry Live, and we have one more segment to go on the program. A perfect time to remind you, Moody Radio is listener-supported. You are our lifeline to on-air, live streams, podcasts, the whole shooting match worldwide. Thank you for your support at chrisfabrylive.org. Our program is Chris Fabry Live. You can find us online at chrisfabrylive.org and link to our guest Alice's website, hiswheels.org. hiswheels.org. And they're looking at the trike pilot project in North Africa. There's a video on there, a bunch of videos. But this is just really fascinating how these are constructed. And again, the mission statement for His Wheels International is, our mission is to provide pedal-powered transportation with dignity through global partnerships as a tool for expanding Christ's kingdom. And so you don't necessarily put Bible verses on the side of the trikes or the bicycles, but they are to carry people to help give the gospel, and which is just a fascinating thing that God would implant that on your heart, and then that in the condition that you have, He would use you in so many people's lives around the world and do that. That's just like God to do something that, like that, isn't it?
Sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so in 2005, we began small, and of course, I was thinking, Lord, how can I do this? How can I be the executive director of an organization when I can't even hold down a job? But I have found that my disability is something that is used by God to allow other people to find their niche within the work. I can't control things, so God's in charge, and He knows who we need to come alongside of us.
So, and that's an interesting way to put it, that your disability, your heart and your desire is to do one thing, but you know that you can't do it. And so in your weakness, God can bring other people in there to shore that up and to expand the vision in a sense.
Right. And that vision has been, 4 months after we started, the vision took a whole different turn than we had even thought about. And that was, I had met with an African government official who saw the picture of the trike we bought in Nigeria, and he said, wow, we need trikes throughout Africa because of those affected by polio, landmines, or other disabilities. And, landmines is something that has caused millions of people to be maimed and killed since the 70s. And one thing CFIDS can't steal is your dreams. And I went home and I thought, I want to take a welding class. I figured if I could learn how to weld, then somehow I put an equal sign equals building a trike. I knew I couldn't do it. My health couldn't take the fumes. But a month later, I was at a birthday party just blessing a guy who was wasn't sure why he didn't have friends. And someone said, you need to talk to that guy, Kevin, the one who's standing in the corner. They're just making his obligatory hellos. And I talked to him, and I said, this is my goal, to take a welding class, learn how to weld and build a trike. And he said, I'm a mechanical engineer. Can I design, build, and pay for the prototyping? My only regret is that I didn't say, let me pray about it first. But
yeah. Isn't that something?
But within a week, he had the first design. And now, 5 years later, he's designed 15 different prototypes, a junior racer, and a whole factory so that trikes can be built more efficiently and accurately in other countries.
And what about, let's say with Africa, what kind of stories are you hearing from people whose lives have been changed because of those two or three wheels?
Well, I just have a story from last night. I saw a video, and this was in Haiti, actually. We sent a trike to Haiti. And the young man, his arms are kind of the size of my calf. And he is in a mountainous area, Lakai, Haiti, and it's very mountainous, but he's very strong. He's been pulling himself around on crutches for 26 years of his life, and his lower extremities don't work. And he, they thought the illness was due to voodoo, and, he was given the trike, and he ruined the tires within a year. That's how hard he's been on the trike. And when they put new wheels on it just a few months ago, they took pictures of it. And I was so impressed, not by that, but by the fact that then they laid hands on him and prayed that God's grace would work in and through his life. And, you know, I thought of the verse that says, when you have done it unto the least of these my brothers, you have done it unto me. And, you know, they could confidently put their hands on him and pray for him because they had provided a basic need of transportation for him. Yeah. And I was just, tears just rolled down my face last night as I read that story, and I thought, you know, this is as powerful as quoting any verse of Scripture, yeah. This young man.
There is nothing that can't be done through the dream that God gives and his power in us. I think that's where the Scripture that talks about that everything is possible. You know, it's not that God's just going to willy-nilly move a mountain and just say, see, I told you I could do that. But in that man's life, a mountain was moved, even more than a mountain, because he can go over it, you know?
Yeah,
he can go around it.
He can tool around on that bike. You can tell it's just something he does with great ease and enjoyment. And, you know, I'm grateful that we've had this opportunity to give bikes away, because in our existence, we have given away 1,400 bikes and trikes to people affiliated with 83 countries. And, you know, I never had the chance to fulfill my goal of biking on all seven continents. But when I get to heaven, it will be much more satisfying to hear someone say, I didn't wave at you when you rode by on your bike, but because of a bike, I was able to serve my own people.
Isn't that great? You know, and I think of people who have a ministry to send shoes to people who don't have shoes, and here is transportation. God is raising people up to do what we can't think of. You know, God is raising people, even people with disabilities, raising them up to perform these types of things and really miraculous things. May your tribe increase. Alice, it's been good. I could keep on talking with you the rest of the week. I'm going to stop it right there, but I'm going to encourage people to go to your website, find out more about the ministry, which is just in Illinois right now, but who knows what God wants to do, and maybe chapter in all 50 states, and I think it's just a great idea. Thanks a lot for joining us, Alice.
Thank you.
Well, that's a good start to the new year. I can already tell 2012 is going to be a great one. And our goal here is to help you make a difference wherever you are, whatever your dream is, whatever God has given you, to help you follow that in His strength so that He will get the glory. If you want to find out more about us, if you want to find out about Alice and go to her website, just head on over to chrisfabrylive.org. ChrisFabryLive.org, and come on back tomorrow and bring a friend with you, if you will, to the Backyard Radio Fence. Chris Fabry Live is a production of Moody Radio in Chicago.
The programs that you support on Moody Radio not only benefit you and your family, but they can also make a difference in the lives of your neighbors. Programs like Chris Fabry Live and Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman. You know, recently these two combined their talents to bring you another resource, A Marriage Carol from Moody Publishers. With a nod toward Charles Dickens, this warm fictional story follows Jacob and Marley, a couple on the brink of divorce, and follows them all the way to hope in Jesus Christ. We'd like you to have a copy of A Marriage Carol. You can either keep it and enjoy it yourself or share it with someone who might be going through a difficult season. It's our way of saying thank you for supporting us. Look in your monthly support letter to see how to get a copy of A Marriage Carol by Chris Fabry and Dr. Gary Chapman. If you don't get our letter but you'd like to, call 1-800-DL-MOODY. That's 1-800-DL-MOODY.
Well, we sure hope you enjoyed the program today. I'm Chris Fabry, hoping you will visit us at the website for updates, past programs, links to guests, my website and blog, and a whole lot more. And don't forget to join us for our next visit at the Radio Backyard Fence. And thanks for your support. Contact us online today at chrisfabrylive.org.